Well, I have hit record and I have lines. Hey everyone, you're listening to the Damn Fine TV podcast. I'm your host, Jasmine.
And I'm Mels.
How are you, Mels?
Doing great, doing great. I was down for the weekend with like this pesky migraine, and it was like just the absolute worst. But I got some Damn Fine TV in between like naps and stuff like that.
Nice.
So it wasn't a complete, you know, bomb of a weekend. But yeah, I'm glad to be feeling better and back up to par now.
Yeah, same. I'm glad to hear you're feeling better. So yeah. Frustrating. Was it, before we started recording, I asked if things had kind of cleared up with the fires and the smoke and everything, but I can't actually remember what you said already.
Yeah. So the air quality is much better and smoke is cleared up for now. So hopefully it stays at bay. But I mean, the fires are still going. So Who knows if we'll get like a big, and I don't want to say like a gust of wind. It's not like one gust, but you know, like if wind picks up, it'll bring it in and everything. So
yeah, like
there's a
start
chance it'll
direction.
Be back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But as of right now, it's good. So.
Well, that's good. At least you can get outside and get some fresh air and stuff. But I feel for the people that I guess are still in the thick of it. But I mean, I just don't know too much about, I mean, because I know there's like a fire season where there's some like natural fires and stuff. But man, I feel like there's just so much going on in the news that has not been the thing to say stay center stage, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, and then it doesn't help that it was particularly dry, of course, you know, and it is fire season. I don't really honestly know when that like wraps up, but I think we're still in fire like danger. But it doesn't help when you have people that are like shooting off, you know, rockets or fireworks or whatever for gender reveals.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it does not help.
And then it like sets a good portion of like the state on fire. So.
Oh my God. Yeah. Joke's on you. It's a fucking fire. It's not a boy or a girl.
And you know, the hardest, or well, not the hardest, but like probably the worst part of that, which I don't want to say it's not deserved, because I mean, it was sort of a foolish thing to do, but that you're going to have to be spending so much of your life, like paying back restitution and stuff for starting this fire.
Which you're right. Yeah. It's well deserved.
Yeah. So, I mean, as if like having a baby is not like tough enough, you know, like with the anxieties and the cost of that, then you've also got to pay back the state for setting it on fire.
I mean, and like, listen, I'm not a mother. And so I don't know what it's like to have a baby inside you and to want to know whether or not it has a penis or a vagina. Like, it could matter so much. But like, right. I just can't imagine going to those lengths to know that, you know, like, you're gonna find out. It's not like it's gonna be a secret forever.
No, and listen, I have had, you know, children, and I will tell you that I went the very old-fashioned route, which was, okay, are you ready to know the sex of the baby? Yeah, okay, it's a boy. All right. And
Great.
Then you just like make a post on social media. You're like, it's a boy.
Sure.
And that's like it, you know?
Yeah. So. I mean, that's exciting in itself, you know? Like, I mean, more recently, my cousin and his fiance had a baby. And when they told us it was a girl, it was very exciting, but it was just a text. And that was exciting enough.
Exactly.
We didn't need to start a fire to like let the world know.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And people like, get super creative nowadays with all kinds of like just out of this world gender reveals. So yeah, I kept it very like low key. I was like, okay, it's a boy and yay. And then that was it. Like, I just went on about my day.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, I mean, like, no shade if you want to do a little celebration for it or whatever. I just think that there's a line, you know, between starting fires and not starting fires. Yeah. And we can all stay to the one side of that line, I think. I think we're all smart. Maybe we're not all smart enough to do it. Clearly, we're not all smart enough to do it, but we should aim for that.
We should strive for that level of smart, critical thinking there.
I think so. Oh, man. People are wild.
How are you?
I'm good. I went camping this weekend.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, just for the Saturday night, but it was still like, it was a nice little getaway. It was a lot warmer than we thought it was going to be, so that was nice. Like, we had prepared, I mean, we brought like extra blankets and stuff, but I don't even think any of us really put on a jacket at any point, which was nice. So, I mean, we had sweaters and stuff, of course, but yeah, so that was nice. And we went camping kind of adjacent to like wine country. So we hit up some wineries on the way, and like there was two of us drinking, one of us was the DD, right? But we were like, it was a very fun little adventure to just be driving around like that. But it was good. And it was still kind of the full moon. So at one point I'm not going to lie, we all just got up and howled at the full moon because we had that much wine at that point. So
I love it.
It was just, you know, three ladies getting in touch with the wild side. So
very cool.
Yeah. It was really nice. It was a nice weekend away. And then like yesterday, so on Sunday, it was a very relaxed day. Like once I got home, I was like, I just need to chill out. Cause last night, you know, clearly I just said I howled at the moon. So it got a little crazy. But I finally watched The Invisible Man. And it was so good.
Yes. I'm so glad to hear that.
I love that film. It was not at all what I was expecting in so many ways, but in a good way. It definitely went beyond my expectations for it. Just so much of what I was not expecting, but really, really enjoyed it. And it was actually like, it was spooky, but it wasn't, I mean, like, I didn't lose sleep over it, which I like. I appreciate that, you know, that I got a good night's rest after watching it. But it's definitely one of those movies that plays on your mind. Like I've been thinking about it all day, and I'm sure I'm going to keep thinking about it. And even like, you know, just being at home alone tonight, like when Tyler took the dog for a walk, it's like, man, there could be there could be at least one invisible man around me. There could be multiple invisible men. Like it plays on your mind in that way, but I really like it for that reason. Like it's very, it sticks with you.
Yeah, I loved it for the same reasons. And I did the same thing, though. So I went to see it in the theaters, and this was right before.
Okay, I was going to say, when did it come out? Yeah.
Yeah, it was right before COVID really ramped up and really hit. And so I went to see it with a girlfriend, but we went to the evening show of it. And when I got home, like everyone was already asleep, and I got in and I was like getting ready for bed. And I was like, Is someone in my bathroom right now?
Right?
You just like you said, it plays with your mind. I don't know. Like just you hear the smallest little sound and you're like, right? What was that?
Yes.
Who was there?
And I think it's because the movie does such a good job of making like this character when he's in this suit, he feels like he's genuinely there. Like just when the camera will linger on like an empty doorway or something. And you, or like just staring at them while they're staring at her while she's in the kitchen or something. Like you really feel like he's actually there.
It made me want to carry around like a big thing of like flour so I could just be like, okay, nobody's there. Then you have to clean the mess up though.
Yes, true. I know when she was like, what did Elizabeth Moss' character put all over the floor? Like, was it coffee grinds or something?
Yes.
I was like, oh, your friend's going to be so mad. Like he's already mad at you right now because he thinks you punched his daughter and like, oh God. And she was just making such a mess. And then the paint, I was like having anxiety over, is she going to clean this up? Like what?
Well, yeah, because then you have the anxiety of the whole like, okay, you're making a lot of mess here. I mean, I understand why you're doing it at the same time. Yeah. It's like, who's going to clean this up?
Right. Because like she's like, to me, this was a bit of a movie about, like, being, like, somebody gaslighting you, right? Because yes. they're making you feel like you're the crazy one, you're doing all this stuff. So he's turning everyone against her. And then so, yeah, so, like, the smallest thing, like, putting coffee grinds everywhere, I was like, oh, my God, it's just, this is making it so much worse. You got to clean up.
My OCD kicks in, and I'm like, okay, ooh, I know what you're doing, but yikes. And like, you're making a mess.
It's like not going to matter in 5 minutes because the scene will be different and like the mess won't be there next time we go to this house. So it legitimately won't matter.
Well, I'm glad to know that I'm not the only person that when I watch like TV or film, like the logistical part of my brain like really kicks in and I'm like, wait a minute.
Always. Yeah.
Think about what about this part of it? Like, I understand that you're really like fighting for your life right now. However,
Yeah, but I'm not currently fighting for my life. So I am of the sound mind to be like, ooh, girl, that's a cleanup. Yikes.
That's true. Oh, my God. I love it.
But it was so good. I didn't see, like, I still don't know if the choice that she made in the end was the right choice because I don't know if we know the full twist. I don't want to get, like, too into details here just in case. But, so I don't know if, like, in the end she was actually wrong about what she was thinking was the truth of everything. And I think the movie does a really good job of like, presenting all that gaslighting so that you're not even sure what to think. I mean, you definitely know that there's a dude in an invisible suit, but like to the extent of like who it is and da 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 da, it's like, it's crazy. And oh my gosh, the part with the sister at the restaurant, did not see that coming.
Whoa,
what a shock. It was like, it didn't make me cry, but I think like if I had been, because I mean, I was a little hungover as I was watching it. So I think if I had been like fully in my body, I think I would have been crying, but I was like a little too detached emotionally, but you know, but that was like such a shocker moment. But such a good movie all around. I'm so glad it finally came to streaming so I could check it out. And I mean, Elizabeth Moss is great. I think we talked about the Handmaid's Tale thing where like she's so frustrating, but I don't know that it's her fault. It's like the script doesn't really give her that much to do anymore. But yeah, I mean, she's amazing in this.
Yes, yes. I'm so glad you loved it. I've been thinking about that. I'm like, man, I hope she just, you know, was able to check it out. Because it is one of my favorite films and I really loved it. So.
Yeah, same here. I really enjoyed it. Have you heard that apparently they're going to do a sequel?
Yes, I have, because they're doing like a whole, I don't want to say reboot. I don't know if that's the right word, but like they're starting the Universal Monsters type thing, kind of like how Marvel has their universe with all the superheroes.
Okay, sorry. It's funny that you say that because at the end of the movie, Tyler was like, well, I don't see how it fits into the MCU, but I like it.
It's not in the MCU. It's going to be in the Universal universe. Because I think they're going to be redoing some of the other like classic monsters, although I don't know which one of the films they're going to be, you know, starting with next. But I do think that the way that it ended, it left it open-ended for there to be another movie. So I'm excited about that.
That's interesting. I don't know that I feel the same. Like I'm almost happy with the way the story was and that it feels a little open. And I don't know that I want any more. But that said, it was so well done that I would check out the second one anyway. Like, you know, I would trust the people behind this production to get it done right. So,
We'll have to see if the sequel gets like that sequel kiss of death, because, you know, usually the sequels aren't that good.
Right. So. Well, interesting. So speaking of sequels, one of the highlights of my week this week was listening to a little podcast called Strangeful Things. And if you don't know that show, you better just stop this one. Go check it out. You'll come back. I know you will. But like Strangeful Things, Mels is one of the hosts. It's an awesome show. She's been singing a lot on that show recently, and it's just been bringing me so much joy. But the sequel thing is that you guys were talking about the movie that you've seen the most in theaters, and you said Scream 2. And so I'm like, wait, why Scream 2? Like, were you too young to go see Scream in the theaters, or did you just miss it, or you just saw it once? Like, why Scream 2?
I did not see Scream in the theaters. We went to Blockbuster and rented that.
Nice.
I don't think it's because I was too young. I just think that my mom just did take me to see that one. But I was so obsessed with Scream that when Scream 2 came out, I went to see that one in the theaters and I begged my mom and she dropped me off. And then I went so many times because I'm from a really small town and we had to go to the next town over for the movie theater. But like kind of the max entertainment that we had was like going to the movie theater.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. But I enjoyed Scream 2. I thought it was actually a really good sequel. So, yeah. But I did see that one so many times in the theaters. And it was kind of crazy because people are like, oh, well, but what, like you just said, like, what about the first one? And I'm like, well, I didn't get to see that one in the theaters, unfortunately.
Yeah. So you were making up for it by going to Scream 2 so many times.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I agree. I really like Scream 2. In fact, I like all of them. I like 4 the least. I think that's a pretty, you know, similar consensus. Like, I think everybody kind of agrees with that, but yeah, I liked all of them. Sequel was fun. I like, we watched it really recently, actually, and I totally forgot that Timothy Oliphant was in that.
I know. He pops up everywhere.
Right? Yeah. I mean, currently, the challenge is ongoing. I mean, everyone knows now. I couldn't get to it on Sunday because I was feeling that hangover. But, like, we're still doing the part of the challenge for Canceled Too Soon. And the two shows that wound up in the final round are both Timothy Oliphant shows. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I just thought that was super interesting that it was Scream 2. And but, yeah. And then speaking of more sequels, in fact, The Haunting this Friday. I'm so excited. I like,
cannot wait.
People are trying to make weekend plans with me and I'm like, I don't know though, guys. Like, I got 4 episodes to watch and I kind of want to spread it out a little bit because I feel like if I do it all in one day, I'll either be, I don't know, never able to sleep again if it's as scary as last year, or just like really sad that I can't move on and keep watching. So I don't know. Might have to be 1 episode per day this weekend.
I am so excited for that, though. Oh, my gosh. I had turned Netflix on today for Wildcat, or for, I call him Wildcat. So I turned it on for him because he's really kind of into this new Yogi Bear movie that's out.
Cute.
but yeah, it said, you know, The Haunting coming up. And I was like, oh, I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
Yes. And just seeing Oliver Jackson Cohen, I think is his name, in The Invisible Man yesterday, I was like, just getting even more hype. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. So that's exciting. So that's what we're going to be covering next week. I think we decided to do episodes 1 through 4.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's only going to be 9 episodes, I think.
I know. I saw that.
Yeah. So I don't know. Let's just see how things go and we'll decide, like, how many episodes we want to cover per our episode. But yeah, I think 1 through 4 for next week. So everyone, watch and make sure you're caught up and come hang out with us. Or if you're too scared, we'll just tell you what happens. And
yeah, exactly.
It'll be more fun anyway. But yeah, I mean, are you ready to enter the Twilight Zone?
I've been ready, girl. Yes.
There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Okay, well, why don't we kick things off with The Hitchhiker?
Yes.
So I thought maybe I would just give a little summary and then we can just talk about what we thought.
Perfect.
So basically, The Hitchhiker is about a woman that's driving across country and she keeps seeing this same guy, this same hitchhiker. Like, it doesn't matter how far she drives or how many days it's been. She just keeps seeing this same guy, the same hitchhiker. And it's kind of hard to tell if she's just sleep deprived, paranoid, or something else is going on. But the stress and like the strangeness of seeing this man all the time just starts to slowly drive her mad. And basically that's what happened. So this was Scott's pick. This was your husband's pick. What did you think?
Oh, I loved it. Well, and I had seen it, but it had been a very long time since I'd seen it. And it was so much fun to revisit this episode because, well, first of all, my mom loves this episode as well.
Oh,
and
I love
it. And so it was, but after I rewatched it, I was like, I can totally see why this is also like one of the best episodes of the Twilight Zone, because it just, the way it ends and the twist at the end, you're just left like, oh, really? You know, like, kind of messes with you, because this whole time, and you're thinking to yourself, like, how is she continuously driving? She's not sleeping.
Right? Because she says, you stop, or you drive, you stop to eat, you drive, you stop to eat. And I was like, but don't you stop to sleep? Like, where is that coming into play?
Man. And so, yeah, it's one of my all-time favorite episodes of the series, though. And it was just fun to revisit it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. This main actress, I have her name here, Inger Stevens, who plays Nan Adams, who's this lead woman that I was talking about who's driving everywhere. She was very captivating. I mean, she essentially has to carry this episode. I mean, it's mostly her. But she, yeah, the way she, how do I put, like, I don't know. I think things maybe escalated a little quickly, but it's a 25-minute episode, so they don't have a lot of time to build things like this. But her reaction, I think, was what drove everything. And it just was, like, really perfectly plotted, I thought. Like, just from her being kind of super casual about this accident that happens at the beginning of the episode and being, like, yeah, like kind of chill about the fact that she was just in this big accident. She's going to keep driving, and she kind of brushes off the first interaction or the first sighting of the hitchhiker. But it's like I said, it just starts to slowly drive her mad. And it was very interesting to watch her go through those motions and stuff and to see like that decline within her. But and the hitchhiker was like, I love that scene at the beginning where his face just pops up right in front of the camera. It was so, there's something really, like, I didn't write down this actor's name, but he's not like a super creepy looking dude, but he's also not a very normal looking dude either. He's like somewhere in this strange middle zone where I think that's what makes him creepier, because like you're not really sure. You don't have a good handle on him one way or the other. And it's like, is something supernatural going on? Because he just keeps popping up. How is this possible? And so, yeah, it just underlines all of that for it to be like, wait, this is so uncomfortable. This is so unsettling. Like, what could this possibly be? Now, I do think that some of the dialogue in the beginning is a little revealing as to what the twist is. So let's just say the twist now. So if you haven't seen it and you do want to see it, skip ahead. But so she's been dead this whole time. She died in that accident in the beginning. And I do think that dialogue about her, her saying, well, it's cheaper than a funeral, eh? I was like, okay, I think maybe she died in this accident. But I have to wonder, like, if I had watched this in 1960 when it first came out, would I have expected that? Or is it that this set a tone for like so much horror to come after that? Like, I mean, this is like, I feel like this is where M. Night Shyamalan got his inspiration for The Sixth Sense. Like, it has to be in there somewhere, right? So if I hadn't seen stuff like that, would I even be sort of programmed to be looking for that kind of thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I really do think that this was the beginning of the psychological horror, right? So, Twilight Zone in general. And because I don't think anything like this had ever been on TV, let alone, you know, maybe in films, things like that. Because you really did start seeing, like, quote unquote, scary films, I think, until like late 60s, early 70s. Now you have like Hitchcock, right? You know, but yeah, I really think that this, I think for us watching it in modern times, it probably is a lot easier to pick up on what that twist might be, because there are stories written like this, you know, there are movies that are, you know, centered around this, like you said, Sixth Sense. And I think there are TV shows that take this concept as well. But I just think to be in 1961, you just wouldn't be expecting that at all. It's something very new for that time.
Yeah. And that's what I was kind of thinking as I was watching it too. And I don't think that like me having like this suspicion that that's what's going on, it didn't ruin the episode at all for me, you know? And it was still such a it was a very interesting journey. Like it was enjoyable. It was spooky. It was exactly what I was hoping for from the Twilight Zone, to be honest. And like the fact that I kind of saw that coming, it just didn't ruin it for me at all because I was just enjoying what was happening. But that's what I kept thinking. I was just like, I think I've just watched so much television and so much film. And because this is from, you know, so many decades ago, it's obviously influenced a lot that's come after it. So yeah, there's going to be like some of its DNA in other things. And so, yeah, like, I mean, maybe that helps to kind of pick up on things, but it didn't really matter to me. And I mean, so one of my favorite scenes was when she gets stuck on the railroad tracks.
Mm-hmm.
That was really intense.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, even though I had this suspicion that she had already actually died in that road accident, it didn't matter. It was like, this is so menacing. This guy really is out to get her. Why did she even try to go across this track at this point? Like, I know she was feeling very nervous and trying to get away from him and everything, but like, that was just, I mean, that was making my heart pump.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was a really intense scene. And even though, like, I know I keep saying, even though I've seen it before, mm-hmm. I still, like, my heart was, like, pumping through my chest. I was like, oh, my God, please get off those train tracks. What are you doing? You know?
Yeah, it was really well done. And I don't know if I'm remembering incorrectly, but it feels like there wasn't a lot of music in this episode. I mean, there was definitely like those, I mean, more than horror strings, but it just felt like it was quiet in that way. And mm-hmm. so I think things were really building when she was on those train tracks and there was more of like a background kind of ambiance, let's say, or more of a backing track. And so I felt like it really just heightened the tension really well in that moment.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I agree with that. Plus the horns, from the train and everything. It was
it got closer and louder. Yes.
Yeah.
But okay, so do you think that like knowing what's happening, like understanding the twist at the end, are we watching people interact with a ghost or are we watching her sort of in limbo before she's ready to move to whatever's beyond that?
I took it as limbo.
Yeah.
Because I guess the hitchhiker was the one at the end where he was like, you know, are you ready to go now? You know, going my way. Yeah. Like he's going to take her, you know, over to the other side. So I took it as that she was in limbo. And I'm assuming when you're in limbo that you can still be seen by regular folk. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay, maybe. So you think it's kind of like a mix of the two things that I just suggested.
Yeah.
Super interesting. Okay.
That's what I got out of it.
Yeah. No, I think it's all just, like, I wonder if what we saw was that moment before, you know, this is giving me now Mulholland Drive vibes a little bit. Like, is everything that we saw in that movie, like, just before that woman dies, you know, like, that's like her life flashing before her. And so maybe that was the same thing here. Like, this was in the final moments of her life that she was just processing it. But it feels obviously a lot longer to the person who's dealing with that, right? But,
right.
I don't know. I guess because there was so little explanation, which it didn't need to have an explanation, but in terms of like her interacting with the mechanic, the sailor, the hitchhiker that she actually does pick up. And the guy that owns the gas station, like it just felt like, I mean, I'd be totally fine if she was kind of a ghost or whatever interacting with real people, but because there was nothing, sort of outlined or further explained about that, I just figured that this was all in her head and we were just witnessing what was going on. Yeah.
So it was all a dream, huh?
Well, like one of those like before you die kind of dreams. Like, I don't know what to call it, but I mean, it's like when people say they were in that near-death experience and everything flashed before their eyes or whatever, right? But I mean, she was definitely going through those stages of accepting the fact that she had died.
Yeah. Oh, this poses a lot of great questions.
Which is what I really like about it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the fact that you can do that in 25 minutes.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. And I mean, it's like, I think it has something to say for, you know, this larger idea of like, death is kind of always around. Like, it's kind of just a constant presence. It's something that we can't really shake as humans. We all know it's coming, you know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I think that most of us can get through a day without thinking about it constantly, but there are times, or I guess like when you just, when you watch something like this, you remember like, yeah, I mean, it's coming for all of us eventually.
Yeah.
You know, we're all going to eventually have to pick up the hitchhiker and go his way.
Sorry, I'm sitting here just thinking like, almost like with the Invisible Man. Now I'm like, I don't want to see any hitchhikers like when I'm riding around. Right? Either.
Yeah, no, thank you. And that's such a good like package to deliver all of this through, because there is something about a hitchhiker inherently that feels dangerous and scary too, right? You know, yeah. Like I have never been in a situation where I've picked up a hitchhiker, and there are urban legends about hitchhikers, and for good reason, because you never know what these people are going to be like. And I think as humans, sometimes we can say, okay, I'm going to take a chance on this human and hope that they're genuinely in need and that I can genuinely help them. But you never know. I mean, they could be the nicest person. They could be a serial killer. They could just be really annoying and want to talk your ear off about like the most boring shit, or like, I don't know, super religious stuff, or like, yeah, super political stuff. Like, who knows? But there's like that, there's that mystery to the hitchhiker in general, which I think is super interesting to frame it this way, right?
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was so much fun to watch. I, you know, I actually found the, I want to talk about the sailor for a couple minutes. So the sailor is the guy that she picks up. I actually found him to be the most like, not that I didn't think the hitchhiker's presence was uncomfortable and spooky, but he was almost the more uncomfortable part for me too, because it's like, this is the guy that she actually picks up, and he sat so close to her. Their whole conversation had all this very big undertone of like, he's definitely hitting on her. And then I like the way that expectations are kind of subverted when it's like, okay, lady, you're crazy. I gotta get the fuck out of your car.
I gotta go. Keep the shoes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He doesn't even take his shoes.
He was like, I don't care. I'm out of here.
I'll be barefoot.
Yeah. But, you know, that made me, it made me uncomfortable though, because I was thinking to myself, like, it doesn't, like, no matter the situation, there is always the opportunity for someone to be a real fucking creep. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like,
she picked you up and she was like, I will take you all the way to San Diego. And she did that because she's trying to have some protection from the hitchhiker or whatever. And he turns out to be such a creep, but it doesn't even really faze her because she keeps swerving and like all of that. And he's like, lady, there's no one there. And yeah, he's like, I'm getting the hell up out of here.
Oh, man, it's so true. Like, she wasn't fazed by any of it. She was just, she had her goal. She was like, I just need this dude in the car. I don't care what he does. Like, as long as, I mean, and I guess we could read that too as kind of being like her not ready to let go either. Like, she was looking for something else to sort of prolong whatever was going on. Yeah. Oh, I really liked it. It was a great pick. Thank you, Scott. Good choice. Yeah.
Thanks, Scotty.
Okay, so let's do The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, which was also, this also aired in 1960. So both of these were season one episodes, and they actually weren't that far apart. I think The Hitchhiker was like 16 or 17, and Monsters Are Due on Maple Street was like 22 or something like that. So yeah, very close. So the summary here is that a strange shadow passes over the idyllic Maple Street, USA, accompanied by a flash of light and a strange sound. The residents assume it's a meteor, but soon their power goes out and anything motorized or like electrically powered stops working. a local boy believes there's been an alien invasion, and the residents begin to suspect one of their neighbors could be the alien hiding amongst them. Paranoia, prejudice, and hysteria ensue.
Woo, woo.
So this was my favorite of the three that we watched. I'm really? Yeah, I'm really glad that we added it to our list. I think it had the most intriguing story, but also like just the most clear kind of allegory. I think that it had a very clear goal and it set out and it executed it very, very well. And to me, this was the episode that the escalation of things built really nicely. Like, I think that this was, the pacing was the best of all three of them. And I think that it was, you know, not that, you know, both The Hitchhiker and Not All Men, which we'll talk about in a minute, like they both feel relevant, honestly. Mm-hmm. But this one kind of felt just the most relevant and like it could be relevant in almost any time, right? Mm-hmm. I think that when this first came out, just based on the time frame, I feel like it had to do with Cold War paranoia and believing that there was like Russian spies amongst everyone and not knowing who to trust and the fear mongering that was happening from, you know, governments and corporations, whatever. But like, I think that that could be the same thing today. I mean, like we constantly see governments trying to pit people against one another and using like fear to try to unify people, which never works. But just the mob mentality and the way that those things happen. I mean, we see it all the time in also like post-apocalyptic shows, right? But I think that happens so often in everyday life. And I just think it was so easy to build that story, but they did it in a really interesting way. And like the fact that everything happens on this one very tight kind of set felt very claustrophobic and very uncomfortable. And the camera angles that they were using and the close-ups, like it just, I don't know, it all really like amped things up in a really nice way. And I really enjoyed this one. How about you?
Same. Now, and again, I can't really put my finger on why The Hitchhiker was my favorite, but it's not that I didn't like this one. I really, really enjoyed it. And I had never seen, actually, I don't ever recall seeing this one before. So if I had seen it, it didn't stick out in my mind. But I think the scariest part, like you said, was the mob mentality of it all and how easily it was for them to point their finger at someone and then shift it over to someone else when something else started happening. And the big twist in this also, I really enjoyed because I was like, wow. You know, I guess we can go ahead and say what the twist is.
Yeah, go for it.
It was a alien ship, I guess, that had come in and they were controlling all of the power failures and outages. And then they were seeing what their reactions would be as they turned on certain things for certain people. And even when we got to the big, well, I'd say the climax, but when they killed that poor guy.
Poor Pete.
Pete was just trying to go over to the next street to see if they had power. Like, that just shows you the mania and the hysteria that comes along with the mob mentality, right?
Totally. You know? And just, like, the whole shooting before asking questions feels very relevant today, too. It's like you will go to that length because you're so afraid and of what you don't even really know.
Right.
It's just that everyone else around you is as afraid. And even though, like, there's that character Steve who's trying to be the voice of reason, I mean, even eventually he turns on that one guy. Like, I mean, they all go to, is it Tommy in the end? Is it the little boy that they all turn on in
Tommy.
The end?
Yeah.
So, I mean, even this guy who was like the moral compass kind of throughout eventually is taken over by that mob mentality, right? But yeah, I mean, that twist was great because, you know, even if there had not been that extra layer, I think watching these people turn on one another and constantly believing that, you know, they were just otherizing one another and just saying like, oh, it's you that's the problem or it's you that's the problem. I mean, it's that was interesting in and of itself. But the idea that there were these two aliens kind of controlling and poking and prodding at these residents on this street, that's what gave it the layer of like, oh, the government like propaganda or fear mongering or whatever. Like it really sort of gave it that extra texture for me where it's like, yeah, I mean, we will turn on, I think. And like I said, we see this in kind of like post-apocalyptic type stuff where we will turn on people when we're afraid, when we're, you know, concerned, like, oh, I didn't know who he was. It was coming out of the darkness. And like, you will say things to protect yourself, right? But I think the idea of having some hooded figures, let's say, behind the scenes makes it all the more interesting because it's like, I think that's where some of the paranoia sets in for some people too. And you have to like be a better critical thinker, but like that is happening. I mean, that's like, that's governments or that's corporations or that's basically anybody in power that can fuck with middle to lower class America, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I loved also how the figures or the people at the end, they were like, oh, though there are a ton of Maple Streets out there, like basically saying like you could do this anywhere and you're going to more than likely see the same result because like we said, this is, you know, in bringing out the fear in people. And when you bring out the fear in people, and it doesn't take much. I mean, like they said, you just taking away their devices, cut their electricity off. I mean, these modern technologies for them, you know, if you take that away and you stop that for them, what reaction you get out of it. It was really thought-provoking for me.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I don't think it's a direct parallel, but I mean, and there was something obviously more serious involved, but if we just look at what's happening this year with like COVID-19, I mean, so much was taken away from people and there's obviously a life or death risk in this scenario, but just look at the response from some people and in certain communities, like people that maybe didn't believe in COVID-19 and that still don't, and the way that they reacted. And again, it's not like it's not a perfect enough parallel to really, you know, make all the connections, but I was sort of wondering, like, what would have happened if our internet went out? What would have happened if we didn't have access to maybe some television or even just like heating in our homes back when it was still winter and we were going through this pandemic? Like, how would that have changed things or escalated things? And I mean, I'm glad it didn't come to that. I'm sure people had power outages and internet failures and stuff like that, but like not, you know, across the board. So.
Well, you know, when I also think about the what's happened with COVID as far as like everyone, their lives kind of stopping and you're not being able to go out like to a film or go out to eat or even the luxury that we really took for granted and didn't think about, like going to the grocery store and shopping, you know, things like that. I mean, when you take that away, what type of, I mean, effect that also has on, you know, your mental health as well, because you just, you're relegated to your home and you don't really think about how nice it was when we were able to go out of the house and not be afraid, you know, of catching COVID and getting sick and things being worse than just, you know, being ill. So I think that you could make, you know, a case for that as well in those terms.
Oh, for sure. I think there are, like, I mean, I think there are connections. I don't know that it was like the perfect line to draw, but you definitely can go there for sure. And like I said up top, I think that this story could be adapted and, you know, made to work for almost any situation. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it will be kind of a timeless classic story in that way, you know, because it's just, it's human nature, really, which is a lot of, I think, what The Twilight Zone talks about. But this one, again, it just felt so clear and so well executed that I just really enjoyed it. The reasons that they started believing their neighbors were the alien in hiding was really funny. And I think having it be such a thin reasoning was all the more like scary because that's how worried that and paranoid these people had gotten. I mean, one guy they blamed, they said, oh, you must be the alien or you must be the monster or whatever, because you look up at the sky at night. And I was like, oh, they, like, I would be the one accused then, because like I go outside and look at the moon like almost every night, but like, yeah. I'm not a monster or an alien. I mean, maybe I am, but like, I'm not out to get you. So it's just funny. Or like this guy making the radio in his basement, which it's like, it's shady enough because it's like, why don't you just do it in your garage? Or like, why don't you just do it on the main floor? Like, why in your basement? But it's like, it's probably just that's where his workroom is, you know, like it's right. Probably such a simple explanation, but the episode did such a good job of translating that suspicion, because in my notes, I literally have, oh, it's totally less. Oh, Steve is definitely the monster. Oh, this Hawaiian shirt guy is definitely the monster. Like, I was like, it's all of them. Oh, man, they're all like, it was totally infiltrating my brain and like making me think they were all the culprit or something. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I felt really bad for Les because as someone who suffers from insomnia, I was like, wow, that's terrible, because there have been many a nights where I have maybe like sat outside. This is pre-kids, obviously, but like maybe sat outside and just, you know, stared up at the sky because I couldn't sleep. And when you have other people in the house that are sleeping, you don't want to disturb them. So you could, you know, look, just sit out on the porch and enjoy the sounds of nature.
I know. But yeah,
I felt so bad for him because I was like, oh, man, I would totally be like strung up and everything because I would be accused of being the monster.
I mean, totally. And that was what I found it just so funny, that they could find these small reasons to otherize their neighbors. Yes. But it was so, yeah, it just worked really, really well. I was like, kind of on board with the mob a little bit because I was feeling the suspicion. I was like, I'm going to guess who it is.
I'm going to figure this one out.
Yeah. I was like, I figured out the hitchhiker. I can figure out this one. But yeah, it was so excellent. I'm so glad that we added it to our list. I had such a good time with it. And I am so looking forward to being able to, I think there's like 156 episodes or something of the original series. Like season one, I think has like 36 episodes.
Yeah.
Which is the most crazy. Like there's no TV season that has that many episodes anymore. Like that's wild.
No.
But I am so looking forward to diving into it. Like I found the episodes on CBS All Access, of course. And because it's like a new streaming service up here in Canada. So I was able to get a 1 month free trial.
Woo. Yeah.
So I got some time, and I feel like it's the perfect show to get into in October as well. You know?
Yeah, for sure. So, for sure.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch more of the old one. But if you're ready to move on to Not All Men,
let's do that.
Is the one that we're covering from the newer like Jordan Peele reboot, which is also on CBS All Access, which is great.
Hello out there, lovely listeners.
After a summer filled with magic and manifestation, we're excited to announce that season two of the Tarot Coven podcast is coming soon.
This season, you can expect our usual chats and cackles as we explore all sorts of witchy goodness.
Like the suits of the tarot, numerology, Reiki, and more.
And we're thrilled to be spilling tea with some very special guests.
The Tarot Coven is grateful for your support, and we'd like to thank you for making our first season such a success.
It brings us great joy to share this journey with you, and we can't wait to see what surprises season two has in store.
We love to hear thoughts and stories from the Tarot Coven community, so make sure you're following us over on Instagram at Tarot Covencast.
Leave us a comment or send us a DM so we can get to know you better.
Check out tarotcovenpodcast.com for more info about the show, our hosts, and episode-specific resources.
This October 22nd, join Jasmine, Jesse, Elena, and me, Jekinovia, as we kick off season two.
And just a week later, we'll be back for some Samhain shenanigans with another of our Wheel of the Year bonus episodes.
And until then, everyone,
keep making magic!
Question, how were you watching these episodes?
I did get the CBS All Access. I got the 7-day free trial. So... Mm. However, the Twilight Zone is on Netflix for me. So
that's nice.
So I can watch the original on Netflix, and then I've got a couple of days left in my 7-day trial where I can get all of the Jordan Peele ones in. But to be honest, I'm probably going to keep it because The Stand is coming in December. So
you're so right. I totally forgot that it was going to be on that one too. Okay, that's a good call. I mean, I might just like sign up later in December, but that's a great call. Okay, so I was asking because they have the option to watch it in color or in black and white. So I was wondering, did you watch in color or black and white?
I watched in color.
Okay.
I didn't even know you could watch it in black and white.
Yeah, at least on my app, it had the option, like the, it had the color option, had the black and white option. I thought about doing black and white, and I think I want to rewatch with black and white, but I watched in color.
Oh, man. Now I want to rewatch in black and white,
though. Yeah, and I think I'll watch other episodes in black and white as well, because I was like, I wonder if, like, I want to do the comparison, at least for this episode, to see if, you know, was there anything specifically from the episode that maybe wouldn't have worked? Because I'm wondering, like, we'll get into it, but there's that red meteor water where I was like, would that have had the same kind of glow to it in a way if it was in black and white? And I mean, I assume, you know, they have the technology now to kind of make it, it's not so like literally black and white. Like, I think it can be a bit of a gradient, but anyways, that was just a question. But it might be worth going back just to watch it in black and white, at least maybe like 10 minutes or so. I don't know, but
that's cool.
Yeah, I thought it was a cool option. So, okay, so Not All Men, a little summary. A meteor shower spreads an infection across a small town, but some of the residents are affected more than others. And this episode really explores male aggression, toxic masculinity, consent, harassment, and choice. So, what did you think of this one?
Okay, this one was the scariest one for me. And it was very triggering. And which I'm glad, though, that they explored that, because it's not always something. Well, there was a touch of, well, okay, hold on. I'm getting myself all worked up here. They alluded to there being some supernatural, but was there really supernatural? I don't think so when you got to the end of it. Right. But not everything has to have a supernatural type feel to it. Like, for example, with the hitchhiker, you had that she might have, you know, been in limbo, and you had the hitchhiker that was trying to bring her over to the other side. Then in the other one, you had, I'm sorry, I'm just going to call it Maple Street because I don't know the entire.
That is okay.
But in Maple Street, you had, you know, the figures that were controlling what was happening on the street. But in this one, you just really had real life aggressions and microaggressions and things that happen on a daily basis. And it may have been triggered by yet another meteor type situation, which I was like, wow, what are the odds of that? but yeah, and I got uncomfortable during parts of this episode. And I think when I say that was good, I mean, you know, like that was thought provoking for me. And it really had me like into the episode, you know?
Yeah. I think that discomfort was very purposeful, right? Like, I think they were trying to push some buttons in a way, or trying to like, elicit that feeling. I like that you are, well, I'm grateful that you're like on the same track as me here with saying, was there anything supernatural to it? Was there not? Because I really enjoyed all three of these episodes. To me, this one felt a little muddy at times in its explanation and in its reasoning because, okay, if there wasn't anything supernatural, then why the lines in the face and the red eyes? Was that just to emphasize the amount of aggression, emphasize what was happening? And maybe that was just something that our main characters were seeing in these men, and that wasn't meant to actually convey anything supernatural. But, or was it? Or was that I mean, let's just get into it a little bit further. Like, basically what happens is, like, meteors rain down on the Earth and, like, all the men are just given basically a permission slip in a way to act on all of their aggression, all of their, like, entitlement and privilege. And I guess you – and basically they start going crazy. I mean, like, they start – basically beating each other up, killing each other. They're going after women. The things are crazy. Very scary. And it starts out very subtly where it's just like a date that a guy goes too far with. And it's one of those situations where you can revoke consent at any time, but this guy is like, No. Like, I thought you were into it. And then he gets, like, all babyish about it, too. Like, oh, why don't you like me? And it's, like, so uncomfortable. But anyways, it's, like, there's this idea that these meteors are what's causing these men to act in this way. But by the end of the episode, we discover that maybe so, but it was still a choice. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they, like, it's like just because you can doesn't mean you should, basically.
Right.
So, like, the son of one of our main characters, Cole, the Martha's kid, basically is starting to be influenced by one of these meteors, but he shakes it off and he explains that, like, it was a choice. I decided not to give in to these impulses, not to give in to this anger and aggression and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I still feel a little unclear by the end whether or not it was the meteors, and maybe it's supposed to be super open-ended like that.
Yeah. I think it is supposed to be open. Sorry. Yeah, I had a lot of thoughts running through my head then. I do think it was meant to be open-ended, and I'm glad that it was, because it also left that mystery of, well, what is it that you are able to control about the situation? You know what I mean? Like, how was he able to fight off those impulses, but virtually every other male that we came in contact with was not able to do it, you know?
Right. I think maybe the boss. I think, like, before he got attacked, I think maybe he was telling the truth that it hadn't. He doesn't say not all men. He said not all of us can have it, which I thought was a very clever way of putting that. But you don't want to trust him in that moment. But then I think by the end, you maybe realize that he was telling the truth. But yeah.
It was scary, though. I mean, like, I believe it was his name, Dylan, when he was, like, at the boat docks and he was, like, swinging that meteor around. Yes. I think that was that was scary. And I was just like, oh, my gosh. And then the part where they drive home from the bar and the motorcyclist is just, you know, following them. And then the whole fight that breaks out there. I don't know. Like, it really disturbed me.
Absolutely. And another thing, like, I think maybe this is just something that the Twilight Zone grasps really well, but, like, escalation and building and heightening the tension, it all happens really well. Like, all of these episodes, I mean, maybe we just picked three good ones, but they were all so well paced. Like, everything felt like it was unfolding very naturally. Like, I did mention that I think the hitchhiker escalated a little quickly, but I think that was also, like, the paranoid state that she was in. But anyways, like, I think that just, everything just kept building in this. And, like, one of my favorite parts about this episode, I mean, first of all, I really liked, I never remember if it's Ray or Rhea Seahorn, but the woman that plays Kim Wexler, who in this episode played Martha. And then we had Thaisa Farmiga, who was playing Annie. Their chemistry was amazing. I really would like them to work together again somehow on something. I totally bought them as sisters and I enjoyed watching them work together, right? But Ray Seahorn in particular, the way that she started to understand what was happening was brilliant. Because I think that even though we had been in Annie's shoes from the beginning, I think that, like, following her just felt really natural. I wrote down a couple of things of, like, how she was going through the motions. So, like, The way she was like just in disbelief at the bar, and it took like Annie kind of pulling her out from the bar, and the way she was just kind of looking around, and then the way that she internalized what was happening and was like, no, Mike's my husband. I can let Mike in. Like, and then when they go to let him in after it's clear that he's been brutally beating this guy that you mentioned that was following them home on the motorcycle, and then he's gone, something clicks for her in that moment, and you can see it in her face. And then when she's like trying to blow the birthday candles from halfway across the room and her voice gets so quiet, oh my God. And then there's something about when they leave, when they finally get out of the house and they're back in the car and they're in that accident that happens like so out of the blue. And it's like, that was one of the freakiest parts to me too, just because it happened so all of a sudden. When she gets out of the car and she blinks, like she just has this blink that she does. And I don't know if it's part like, what the fuck is going on? And I was just in a car accident, I think. Like there's just so much all kind of coming into her awareness at one moment. But she nailed this episode. Like I was just having so much fun watching her. I think she's so amazing. And she gets snubbed way too much on Better Call Saul. Like I don't think she's ever really been recognized for awards or anything, but she's amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I loved the dynamic between her and Annie too. Like you were saying, you know, where they went out for the drinks at the bar and just the way she was trying to get the information out of Annie about Dylan and then just kind of like, you know, and then when she starts to realize, oh, you know, did something happen? I just love the dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah, I really agree. I think that, again, it was just like the motions of everything they were doing just felt so organic. Like, yeah, the way the sister, I mean, it was her birthday. She was having fun. They were out for a drink. She's teasing her sister about this guy that like, oh, you're getting paired up with at work. Like how exciting. Yeah. And she has no idea what's happened the night before. Like she has no idea this, obviously, like, this harassment, this abuse that has happened to her sister the night before. And then when she does realize, like, there's no like cliche, weird, tropey things happening in this episode, you know, like there, nothing like lets you down in that way where you're like, oh, of course that's her reaction. Like, how annoying is that? Like, she just reacts with like, she's just a human. And like, she just reacts in a very loving and sisterly way, you would hope, right? And yeah, I loved that too. One of my favorite parts, though, was when Martha is like, all right, we need to, like, they have all this power from the meteors. We need to get it too so that we can help fight back. And this was, I think, the most clear part in the storytelling for me, because like when she picks up that meteor and she's trying to take on whatever supposed power it might have, it doesn't work. And I think that's a clear message of like, women can participate in patriarchy, in, you know, things like this, but they'll never actually quite benefit from it. Like it's never going to be, they'll never truly benefit from it, because patriarchy, male toxicity is always going to be something that keeps women beneath men, like no matter what. So I really enjoyed that part. And I loved how like Thaisa's character was just kind of like, I don't think that's going to work. Like she was already kind of really caught on to what was happening. Like even if it wasn't a supernatural thing, it seemed like she understood deeper than that. Like, nah, that's not how this works though, you know?
Yeah. I also loved in the end when the military guy was like, you should smile more. And she was like, fuck you.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved that too.
Well, and I like how it kind of bookended the episode, because even before the meteors come, I think they make it very clear that like men don't need meteors to be dicks, right? Because like Dylan, who approaches Annie at work, is saying like, oh, you don't have to say yes to everything that the boss asks you to do. And Annie's line is like, well, I would feel awkward saying no. So there's her vulnerability. There's a very real truth about women in the workplace, women in general, feeling uncomfortable saying no, feeling like they always have to be agreeable and be nice and like be a team player. Like, because if you're not, you're a bitch, right? And like, so the fact that she says that, and right from that, he goes into basically forcing her into having this date.
Yeah.
Like she's very clear that she's busy. She has work to get done, but he's not having it. right?
Right.
And so that is like, that's one of those microaggressions that you brought up in the beginning. Like that's, that seems so innocuous and like nothing big, but it like, she just said she has a hard time saying no, and you're playing on that, you know?
Exactly.
And then so for that thing to happen at the end where, you know, at that point we're like, oh, okay, so it's not the meteors really. It's just like, dudes have a choice and often dudes make the wrong choice, right? And then so for this guy to do this other small thing, like he doesn't start, the veins don't start popping out of his head and he doesn't get the red eyes. He's just that classic old like, oh, you'd be hotter if you smiled.
Yeah. Ugh. Gag me.
Yeah. Yeah. But overall, super enjoyable and like in... Again, like, I think a thought-provoking way, like I said, I don't know that this had, like, the clearest outcome, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But still really, really enjoyable. And I think that the cast really carried it for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really do.
Yeah. So now, and you know, it's funny that you brought up Maple Street at the beginning, because as soon as I read that it was like a meteor shower type thing, I wondered, like, is this going to be kind of a play on the Maple Street one? But I think they're quite different. And I think really the only thing that connects them, because in Maple Street, it's not even an actual meteor. That's just what they believe it maybe was. So.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But there are episodes, I think, that are like, there's... In the newer series, there's episodes that are kind of like reboots of the older series. So those will be interesting to check out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm so excited because I've been wanting to see the Jordan Peele Twilight Zone for so long. So I'm really excited now that I've got the CBS All Access that I'm going to be able to stream those.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we decided to do this because, I mean, I know for you, it's fun to like go back and see the old stuff. It's like super nostalgic and it's like reigniting that like love for it. But for me, this is my first trip to the Twilight Zone and I had a really good time there and I can't wait to go back. Like it's just, I think this is the kind of story that I, or not one story, but the kind of storytelling that I like the most in horror. So I think it should be really fun to explore a little bit more.
Well, welcome to the new dimension.
Thank you. The fifth dimension.
Yeah.
I really wanted to like write a new, like I wanted to like write a riff off of that and be like, there is a damn fine dimension out there unknown to podcasters yet. Something like that. I ran out of time to put it together. I was like, whatever, you know, not meant to be.
I love it. I love it.
And did you know that there is a second season already?
No, I did not.
Yeah, and I don't see it on CBS All Access, so I'm not sure where it is. But apparently a new season, it dropped all at once, like, back in June of this year. So...
I wonder where it's at. Because, I didn't see it on the app for All Access.
No. Yeah, I was really surprised to find that out today. Because even when, like, I was looking up lists for, you know, the episodes in ranking so that we could kind of pick and choose which ones would be the best to cover, like, there's no mention of season two.
That's weird.
Right? They all got lost in the Twilight Zone somewhere.
They're in the fifth dimension.
I'll go looking for them.
I love it. I'll go with you.
All right.
Road trip.
That's our next damn fine adventure.
There we go.
Love it. Well, for real, next week, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, we're going to be covering The Haunting of Bly Manor. I am super stoked for that. As you can probably tell, we are kind of just putting Lovecraft Country on hold. I saw this week's episode. It is incredible. It's probably my favorite of the season, Mel. So I can't wait for you to get caught up.
Yes.
It's like, well, it's a spooky one. Like, really and truly, like, there is some spooky shit in this episode.
Oh, I'm okay. That makes me so excited. Yeah. And I just missed it because, like I said, I was like recovering from the migraine. So, but yeah, I cannot wait to check it out.
Yeah, no, that's totally understandable. But so next week, if we're caught up on Lovecraft, we might like dish on it in the first few minutes, but we will definitely come back to that in November. So yeah, that's all I've got for this week. How about you?
Same here. It's been fun visiting the Twilight Zone with you.
Yes, agreed. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Damn Fine TV Podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform.
Come hang out with us on Instagram and Twitter at DamnFineTV.
You can find me on Instagram at the.written.witch and Mel's at superficialmels.
And if you're watching TV,
make sure it's Damn Fine TV.
Damn Fine
TV.
I don't think that you can get too much Twin Peaks.